Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Have you guys seen the new commercial that is airing during football games and maybe other sporting events too? I'm not sure right now. I'm pretty embroiled in football, both NFL and college, but it's a colt who is raised by goats. And I love horses, babies and juveniles and old horses. I love anything to do with horses. I have since I was a kid, as long as I can remember. And so captivated by the initial part of this commercial where this colt is growing up and he's learning how to follow the goats over all kinds of terrain, mountainous terrain, rivers and streams in the mountains, and different topography. And then he goes into this cave, and as he disappears, he's replaced by the headlights and the roar of a Ford Bronco. And apparently this Bronco has what's called goat mode. I kid you not. Goat mode. 7 or 8 different types of settings for where this Ford Bronco can drive, but it's called goat mode. And I laughed because, number one, it's a witty way to introduce your goat mode with a Bronco that's raised by goats. But also, that's become part of our vernacular. It's no longer just sports, though it certainly does apply to sports, but we hear it all the time now. And it's a relatively recent phenomenon, not the idea that you can be the greatest of all time, but shortening it to a goat and even using the goat emoji or the animal as a symbol of the greatest of all time. It used to be that the goat was the symbol of the curse for the Chicago Cubs that kept them from winning a World Series for more than 100 years. And now goat has become synonymous, both the animal as well as the acronym, with the greatest at whatever it is that you're doing. If you're the greatest, well, then you are the goat. And Gerald says it on our Facebook page. Nick, meaning Saban, I'm sure they're not on a first name basis. Nick is a coaching goat. How many multiple championships coaches have done it with completely different rosters and staffs? He's in a rare club of elite level of coaching, college or pro. Eric doesn't talk about goats, but he says there is a machine. He spells it wrong, so I was trying to add a word. T-H-E-I-R. Theirs is a machine that never misses a beat. It's unreal. I know that both spelling, proper spelling, and punctuation and all of those syntax are completely optional on social media. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Here's what I'd like for my birthday in the spring. For my team to draft Devontae Smith. Though I don't know that he'll still be around when my team drafts. But there's this weird rumor out there. Have you heard this? Kind of the speculation that Deshaun Watson wants a trade out of Houston. That part I can understand. That seems plausible to me, considering what Bill O'Brien did to the roster before he was fired. Deshaun Watson wants out of Houston. And the proposal, now I don't know if it's a proposal that his people have come up with or that he's come up with in one of those trade machines that you can find online. I'm not sure who came up with this proposal, but I did see at least one site attributing it to Deshaun. That he would go to Miami in exchange for Tua and the number 3 overall pick in this year's draft. Again, I don't know if that is something that Deshaun's people came up with or if it's just his agent. Maybe it's reporters, analysts, insiders trying to come up with a way that Deshaun Watson actually can get out of Houston. But there's plenty of speculation that Deshaun will not play next year for the Texans. I think that's crazy. If I'm the Houston Texans, after signing him to a massive contract extension, there isn't a snowball's chance in hell that I trade him. Why would you? He's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. If you want to attract a really quality head coach, and if you want to start to put your team back into contention. Now remember, this is a team that won, what was it, 5 out of 6 AFC South titles until this season? I know they continued to hit the glass ceiling and didn't make it to the AFC Championship, but this team had a lot of success under Bill O'Brien, and Deshaun Watson is a franchise quarterback. His completion rate, his passer rating this year, I think was in the top 3. Maybe it was 2nd in the NFL. He can, in fact, carry a team. I understand. I'd be ticked off, too, if I found out that DeAndre Hopkins was traded on Twitter. And apparently that's how Deshaun found out about the new general manager being hired from the Patriots organization. And did not appreciate the fact that he wasn't kept more closely in the loop. Now, you got to be careful what you hear and read these days, okay? Because you're going to hear potentially incorrect reports that are put out there by maybe maybe Deshaun's people. You're going to definitely hear a lot of noise that may or may not be accurate. So be careful what you believe these days when it comes to rumors and speculation. The latest that I've read is he hasn't officially asked for a trade, and yet there are plenty of stories out there. There's a lot of clickbait, which would tell you that he is not going to play for the Texans again. And I just think that's ridiculous. There's no way. They just gave him a massive contract extension. What is he going to do? Hold out and cough up all that money and miss a year in the prime of his career? No, he's not. He loves to play football. And the Texans aren't devoid of talent. They do need more on the offensive side. And of course, they some year, one of these days, have to figure out how to protect their franchise quarterback. But there was a report from Chris Mortensen, who's a longtime insider for ESPN, former colleague of mine, incredible man, really connected, that he's unhappy. Watson is unhappy, not only because he wasn't kept in the final loop with the GM hire, Nick Caserio, again, coming from the Patriots organization. You may remember the tweet that Deshaun Watson put out right after Caserio's hiring was announced. Again, he found out on Twitter, and his response was, "Some things never change, .. Now, at the time, he didn't clarify, but if you wanted to read between the lines, you could understand what he was saying. But the other part of this report, and I would be upset too if it were me, is that the team did not interview Eric Bieniemy for its head coaching job. So there's multiple pieces to this report. Deshaun feeling like he wasn't included, wasn't consulted in the hiring of Nick Caserio, though he was consulted in terms of his thoughts about culture and about what might fit in Houston. In fact, Cal McNair has said as much, that he spent time talking to his star QB.
I've come to understand that it's been reported that Deshaun feels left out of the process, that he and I had several visits and I understood his point of view before meeting with candidates. I've reached out to Deshaun about Nick's hire, and I look forward to him getting back to me when he returns from his vacation.
Cal McNair is the CEO of the Houston Texans, and they did hire a search firm to help them find a GM, but ultimately ignored what the firm recommended and went with another Patriots. high-level executive. So that's one issue that Deshaun's upset about. And according to Cal, he has tried to connect with his quarterback, but hasn't heard back. Now, Deshaun's on vacation. I'll just be honest. If my boss comes to me on vacation, if my boss tries to reach out to me on vacation, there's a real good chance I'm not answering the emails or picking up the phone, unless it's super urgent. And then I would do that because I have a personal relationship with my boss. I love him and he's been really good to me, and I would make a special exception, but not anybody else. Sorry, producer Dave, but I'm not responding to phone calls or emails while I'm on vacation. So I understand why Deshaun wouldn't be quick to respond to Cal McNair while he is on vacay. Again, I wouldn't either. But if he continues to ignore the phone calls, it starts to send a message. Now, you may remember Deshaun talked about what he thought the locker room needed in its next head coach and its next general manager. And that was someone who could have a strong voice, who could bring the team together. So they were all moving in the same direction. And there's been a lot of criticism of the culture, starting with players. When Bill O'Brien was fired, you know who spoke out? J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson.
Our culture has been repeatedly under question this season. So let me clear that up for all of you right now. We are an organization committed to excellence, both on and off the field. We operate with integrity, character, a winning mentality, and a strong sense of community. We believe you can't go wrong by doing what's right, and ask our fans to trust that we know what's right.
So Cal McNair is maybe spitballing it a little bit here. Went ahead and hired Nick Caserio, believes in the Patriots. And how can you not? I understand that, wanting to feel like you can tap into what was unprecedented success for one NFL franchise over the course of 20 years, believing that you can get Bill Belichick's fairy dust sprinkled on Nick Caserio as he takes over as the GM. But there have been some pretty poor decisions made by that front office. Allowing Bill O'Brien to be his own GM, allowing Bill O'Brien to trade away guys like DeAndre Hopkins, like Jadeveon Clowney. Now, the Clowney situation was one in which they didn't feel like they'd be able to sign him, but it was just another example of how O'Brien kind of raked through that roster. And it was almost like he was dismantling it. Now they don't have any draft picks, and they don't have much flexibility unless they trade Deshaun, which, again, I think is ridiculous. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Producer Dave, can you quickly Google his contract extension terms so I can have that in front of me? But the Texans are not a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in 20 years. I mean, they won the AFC South 4 of 5 seasons coming into 2020. And Deshaun Watson had a phenomenal season, a career year in many ways. As I say, he was second only to Aaron Rodgers in passer rating this season. And I had him as my fantasy quarterback along with Drew Brees and never had to take Deshaun out of the lineup. Ultimately, I only had one quarterback because I didn't need to waste a roster spot when I had Deshaun. His numbers were awesome. And I know a lot of them were done in garbage time, but this is a workhorse. He's a guy that you want to build your franchise around. And this is not an indictment of Tua to the point where I feel like his career can already, the byline on his career can already be written, because that's not fair. But after one season in the NFL, or part of a season in the NFL, let's be honest, there's a lot of development that's needed if he's going to be a viable, competent, long-term starter in the league. Tua is not quite ready. I think he has the tools. He's smart. Obviously, he's a leader. He's used to the pressure. But he did not have a great season. He needs more reps. He needs more time. He needs more development. He needs more training. He needs more work. So if you're the Houston Texans, why would you trade away Deshaun Watson? who you just signed to a massive deal. 4 years, $156 million extension tacked on to what he already had, which was his rookie deal. The end of his rookie deal. And you run that extension through the 2025 season. He's not breaking the bank next year, so he's still relatively cheap. In fact, as quarterbacks go, he's really cheap. Oh my gosh, he's about a quarter of what the going rate is for starting quarterbacks now. He only earns only $10.5 million next year. And he is on your payroll until 26. Now, he's going to be earning more money, obviously, in those years of the contract extension. But you get this incredible quarterback for only $10.5 million next season. Now, Tua is a little cheaper, but he's not nearly as good. Thank you, Dave. This, to me, is ridiculous. And then you would get back maybe that draft pick, one of those draft picks that you gave up to Miami in exchange for Laremy Tunsil. But come on now. If you want to be a winning team, on what planet does it make sense to trade Deshaun Watson for Tua? Again, I'm not saying Tua isn't going to be a good starter in the NFL. But he's not right now. And Deshaun Watson is far more developed, far more competent at this point. And he's cheaper. Not than Tua, but cheaper than most starting QBs. So it makes zero sense to me. I did see a tweet from John McClain, who's the great Texans insider from the Houston Chronicle, who's been on the show a bunch. This was going back to last week, that there was essentially no chance that the Texans were trading Deshaun. So right now it would only be because your quarterback is unhappy. But ultimately, this may sound callous. That doesn't matter. He's under contract. He's not going to sit out a season, even if he does decide to protest and, let's say, skip part of training camp. He's not going to hold out because if you don't play, you don't get paid, period. And he doesn't want to skip an entire season. So ultimately, it would just be a kind of a show of defiance that costs him money. He's not going to skip the year if he doesn't get traded. It's a, I guess, not unlike what's happening with the Houston Rockets, right? And James Harden. He wanted out. The Rockets don't want to let him go. And why should they? They've got him under contract. They don't feel like they can replace him. He's going to play. Once the ball's in his hands, the man is going to do what it is that he loves to do. And so is Watson. He's not going to go out there and tank. No, he wants to win. He wants to play. He's not happy right now, maybe, but there's no way he would ever protest to the point where he would give up a year's worth of salary. And not just the money, also the opportunity to play, to be a starting quarterback in a division that I still say is fairly wide open if they can put some pieces in place. I don't know why you would. I have no idea what the benefits would be to trading away Deshaun Watson if you're the Texans. So I would say caution when it comes to any type of speculation that might happen. Watson may want it. Doesn't mean it's going to work out. All right, now coming up, there is a coaching change in Philadelphia. Why did Jeffrey Lurie decide, maybe a bit of an about face, that they wanted to start fresh after 5 years with Doug Peterson? You will hear from him coming up. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. You can still vote for Monday MVP. This is an NFL poll. It's on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or A-Law Radio, and then also on our Facebook page, and we'll reveal your choice a little bit later. I also told producer Dave that I want to go back and kind of sift through some of the moments from Wildcard Weekend that I'll remember, because it was frenetic. It was chaotic. It was hectic. 18 hours of football, actually closer to 20 hours of football on the weekend. And by the time I finished taking notes, I could barely remember what happened in the first game once I finished processing Cleveland and Pittsburgh. So as I was thinking about it on Monday, I was thinking, man, there's a lot of stuff that we can still talk about. And just like simple moments that I wanted to mention and didn't have a chance to as we were trying to sort through everything on our Sunday night show.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. Hungry for a taste of the most delicious audio of the night? You came to the right place. It's time for Bite Me with Amy Lawrence. Here's Amy Lawrence.
We heard the rumblings coming out of Philadelphia that there could, in fact, be a coaching change, that potentially some conversations between Jeff Lurie and his head coach, Doug Peterson, might not yield the partnership or the cohesion that was necessary to move forward and recover from what was an embarrassing season. And in fact, on Monday, the news broke that Doug Peterson is out of a job and the Eagles have joined the ranks of teams looking for new head coaches. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Lurie did a video conference call in the wake of his decision to explain what this day was like for him and why.
There aren't many tougher days for, I think, an owner of a team or CEO of a business than to have to make a very, very tough decision involving somebody you care personally a lot about.
5 years for Doug Peterson and the Eagles' only Super Bowl title. And there were also other playoff appearances. So why? Why ultimately did Lurie make the decision that Doug Peterson shouldn't be in charge of, we won't call it a rebuilding project necessarily, but this renovation project with the Eagles to get them back into contention? And he went on to say, I'm not asking whether or not Doug deserves to be let go. No, he didn't deserve to be let go. But Lurie said, this is not how I'm evaluating him. It's not about what he deserves. It's about trying to figure out what's best for our franchise and our fans.
I wanted the Eagles so badly to uplift our fans and not create more stress. And I think we've not accomplished that this year. And it's been a disappointing season.
Lurie made it clear this wasn't simply about Carson Wentz. Now, remember, Carson spent the last 4 weeks of the season being benched. He was even a healthy scratch in week 17 when it was Nate Sudfeld who was out there in the fourth quarter replacing Jalen Hurts. But overall, even with Jalen taking over, the offense was 26th in the NFL in terms of scoring. Points per game, not even 21, and even lower than that. So bottom four in the NFL in passing yards per game. And those offensive numbers, that offensive anemia, and Doug Peterson having one idea about how to fix it, and Jeff Lurie having a different idea about how to fix it. Ultimately, that's the reason why they go in different directions. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Again, there have been a playoff trips, even for teams that were banged up and that were behind the eight ball and had to work and fight and scratch and claw to get there. There were playoff wins. There was a Super Bowl. But that doesn't help now. It doesn't obviously affect decision-making this season or moving forward.
I would say strategic mistakes. They were made in the name of trying to hold the band together, kind of bring back the band together. There was a lot of short-term decision-making and allocation of resources that gave us probably a slightly better chance to go back to the Super Bowl in 2018 and 2019.
But not in 2020. You can read between the lines a little bit there with Jeff Lurie. The idea was that they were hoping to recapture that old glory. And Doug Peterson maybe made roster decisions or was spearheading contracts for guys that ultimately didn't help the team and that it blew up in their faces. And I'm wondering if maybe DeSean Jackson was on his mind. Who knows? There are certainly always ways to look back and criticize. No coach, no general manager, and Howie Roseman is a guy who is calling the shots when it comes to the draft and when it comes to their free agent signings, their trades. It's easier to look back and say, okay, that didn't work. We should have known. But you never know. Sometimes you roll the dice. The problem is when you have too many older veteran guys maybe guys break down, you have a bunch of injuries, and your foundation is not built on some exciting young talent or replacing that young talent, kind of keeping the ball rolling, so to speak, you end up in a situation where you're just old and broken down, and you're not able to bring guys off the bench and add to your depth and kind of increase their reps and get them some experience so that your foundation is a little bit stronger. But Lurie said he wants this not to be a source of stress for fans. He wants this to be something that fans can be proud of and that fans can get excited about in the future. And he is hanging on to his GM, Howie Roseman.
I have real confidence that our football operations, led by Howie, can not only repeat the performance of 2016 until now, and once again create a dominant football team that can really maximize every aspects of its potential. And I think that's the transition period we're in.
Three straight playoff appearances for Doug Peterson and the Eagles before it all fell apart in this past season. A record of 46-39-1, that tie coming this year over five seasons. He did have four playoff wins and the first Super Bowl victory in franchise history. And this is kind of interesting, I think, the fact that Jeffrey Lurie has already dropped the name of Deuce Staley. There's a lot of momentum for Deuce Staley, who's a former running back himself, and he was the Eagles' assistant head coach and running backs coach under Peterson. And Lurie singled him out and said he's a great representative of the Eagles who knows our values. That's strong, a strong endorsement, strong praise coming from a guy who has just fired his head coach and is looking to move forward. So that doesn't solve the Carson Wentz question. And Lurie has indicated that he's not going to be the one who makes that decision. Ultimately, that's not on him. He doesn't think the ownership should be making that decision, but Howie Roseman still will remain in charge. One other piece of information that's come out in the reports is that Lurie didn't really like what Peterson was planning to do with the coaching staff. There were names that were being thrown out there to replace the coaches that he had fired, and they didn't know what they were going to do about their defensive coordinator, Jim Schwartz, who is taking the year off from football coming up. And so these conversations ultimately were the catalyst for this decision. I truly believe that Lurie didn't know for sure what he was going to do with Doug Peterson and about his head coach when he met with Doug Monday, and he'd have had conversations before that, or Sunday, excuse me. And they've had conversations before that, but made up his mind in these conversations because he didn't believe that Peterson had the right vision or that it lined up with what he believed was the best for the Eagles as a business. As for himself, Doug Peterson released a statement, said it was an absolute honor serving as the Eagles head coach. And here's the deal. No one can take away that Super Bowl championship. It was an amazing run. It only keeps you employed for maybe a couple of years, right? In the NFL and the NBA, I mean, there are guys who so quickly end up losing jobs after winning titles because it's a what have you done for me lately business in pro sports and college sports, of course. And I do believe that Peterson will end up coaching again somewhere else. He's very well liked, this whole situation with week 17 notwithstanding. But we see these former head coaches end up on other franchises and finding new employment. Did you see that Dan Quinn is now the new defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys? So he gets bounced from Atlanta, one of the seven head coaching openings that there are, and he's replacing Mike Nolan on Mike McCarthy's staff in Dallas. And that's his bread and butter. He was a great defensive coordinator when he was with Pete Carroll in Seattle, and maybe going back to that. Head coaching is not for everyone. It's management. It's communication. It's delegation. It's all of those things. It's being in charge. It's being a boss, and it certainly does not have great job security. So we'll see what happens with Doug Peterson, but now the Eagles become the seventh NFL head coaching job to be open, along with a handful of general manager gigs that are still available as well. And lots of virtual interviews taking place on Monday. I'm sure there'll be more on Tuesday as coaches and coordinators from teams that are currently in the playoffs obviously can make some time to meet on their off days. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Eagles fans, what do you think? What do you want in a head coach? Do you think Deuce Daly would be a great promotion from internally, from Doug Peterson's staff?
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The Colts aren't dead yet. They're inside the 30-yard line of Buffalo. Down by 11 points. Rivers backs the throw on first down. Dancing the pocket.
Touchdown.
Going way downfield for Jack Doyle. He's got it! Touchdown! Jack Doyle! Touchdown! I-N-D-Y! Six more on the board for the Colts, and they're not dead yet.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Loved, loved, loved Wild Card Weekend in the NFL, and I am pleasantly surprised with the number of you who believe this should be the format moving forward. Spoiler alert, the NFL doesn't generally grab real estate, gobble up real estate, and then give it back. No, the NFL is definitely into urban sprawl, so you can expect that the playoffs will remain either at 14 teams or will expand even more. I wouldn't put that beyond the scope of the NFL either, especially when all sports leagues are losing revenue because there are fewer fans or no fans in the stands. Anything that these leagues can do to try to expand their earning power, and that means more national TV games, and that means more playoff games where there are more eyeballs. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Who is your Monday MVP? Coming off of a weekend in which we had six, I'll call them great games, maybe not all as competitive or as high scoring, but six games that really captured my attention, and I hope yours as well. And the Bills beat the Colts in the first game of Wild Card Weekend, though it was a great fight between Indianapolis and Buffalo in Western New York. Matt Taylor with the call of that Jack Doyle touchdown. And then there was the two-point conversion that followed, and all of a sudden, the Colts were within 3 points there in the fourth quarter on the Colts radio network. What are the moments that you'll remember from this playoff weekend? Because even as we talk about the overarching results, so Bills winning their first postseason game since 95, the Browns smoking the Steelers in the first quarter Sunday night, and cruising to their first playoff win since 94 in Bill Belichick. Taylor Heinicke being really a star in the making, even as Washington is losing to Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There are these overarching themes as we look ahead to divisional weekend. We've got the first and second seeds in both conferences, and then the fifth and sixth seeds in each conference that have survived. But what are some of the magical or not so magical moments that you will remember? And I'll give you an example. Here's one for me. I think my tweet, and I'll quote myself here, when this happened was, no! Do you guys remember going back to the first quarter of the Bears-Saints game? So Michael Thomas had just hauled in his first touchdown grab of the season. Right? Very first one of the season. He's back. Kamara's back along with Drew Brees. And the Saints go up 7-0. It's a pretty sweet touchdown drive, and they are off and running. And Chicago comes out on its next drive and is moving the football. In fact, Mitch Trubisky throws what is a perfect, I mean, so accurate, it could have been Drew Brees. So deep, it could have been Patrick Mahomes. It was on the money. Into the end zone, over the top of the defense, to Javon Wims, who whiffs. I can't even say he dropped it, because I'm not sure he ever had it. But he puts his outstretched arms up in the air to catch this perfectly thrown spiral from Mitch Trubisky. And I think it hit him in the chest. It missed his arms altogether, bounces off his chest, and hits the ground. No, what just happened? Oh my gosh. I don't know that Trubisky's ever thrown a better ball in his entire life. And Javon Wims never even had his hands on it. It was just awful. It was one of those that you'll see on a blooper reel. And then they get to fourth and four. They go for it on fourth and four, feeling like they've got some momentum here. And Mitch gets pushed out of bounds short of the chains. And it turns over on downs to the Saints. Now, it wasn't the last opportunity that the Bears would have. But man, how things could be different. It's easy to play the what-if game, right? How things could be different if Javon Wims had caught that touchdown pass. Because remember, they never ended up scoring a touchdown. They had 3 points at halftime on a field goal and never ended up scoring a touchdown until the final play of the game when it was essentially a moot point. By the way, if that's how Jimmy Graham walks off in his NFL career, that was pretty impressive. But it didn't matter in terms of the final outcome. Producer Dave, do you have any moments like that you will remember from Wildcard Weekend that just elicited this emotional response?
Well, it was similar to your reaction to Mike Tomlin choosing to punt. I got the similar reaction to the opposite decision in Frank Reich, who I think is a fantastic head coach.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the ball, you have the momentum, and I get that you're on the 4-yard line of the Bills and you want to score a touchdown. I understand that. But with less than 2 minutes left in the half, you can go up 6 points on the road against, let's admit, the better team in the Bills. Take the 3 points.
Take it. Take it and run!
Seriously. Run it. Run into halftime, hopefully, with the points and a lead on the road. Plus, the Bills are getting the ball in the second half. And I know that Frank Reich is thinking, all right, if we don't get it, at least we're pinning them deep. They have to go 96 yards. But what did they do? They went 96 yards. They scored a touchdown. They stole the momentum back. And then they score again to open up the second half.
Mm-hmm.
That combined with, and again, I know I like Phillip Rivers. I think he's going to the Hall of Fame. But combined with his decision and the play calling, whether it was him or the play calling, in the final drive of that game, they finally get to 3 points as we hear on the Colts Radio Network. But where's he throwing the ball? You talked about
out of bounds.
Yeah, exactly.
The two there were three passes, and I know the Hail Mary in the end zone. I mean, that's, you just throw it up there. At least it was close to someone catching it. The Bills knocked it down. The first two were so far over the head of the receiver and out of bounds, it was like he was throwing the ball away.
Yeah, and even the play calling before he throws it away, he didn't stick with what was working. They were taking chunks as they were moving down the field. And I just don't understand when teams do this all the time. They get away from what's working.
Mm-hmm.
And now he thinks all of a sudden, I got to throw the ball 30 yards down the field and then 10 yards out of bounds. And then there's that Hail Mary that just didn't even come close to succeeding. So it drove me nuts because I think if everything falls a little bit differently for the Colts, I thought they were one of the teams that could have advanced out of this round. And if they're the ones that play the Steelers instead of the Browns, maybe the Colts are still playing, but they still had a chance to even beat the Bills, and that drove me nuts.
It did. Here's another moment that also, I don't know that it drove me nuts, but I could watch another 100 times and still not believe it played out the way that it did. Like Javon Wims, I will still have the same emotional reaction no matter how many times I see it. I think I mentioned this briefly on last night's show when we started in the wake of the Browns and Steelers. First snap of the game, it goes way over the head of Ben Roethlisberger. So Marquise Pouncey airmails it. It goes all the way back to the goal line. James Conner gets there first. In fact, he had plenty of time. By the time the Browns got started, they were a good 5 steps behind James Conner. He flops down and misses the ball. And I don't know. I mean, I'm stuttering just thinking about it. I have watched it so many times. Every single time he flops down, I think he's going to land on the ball. But instead, it was almost like he flopped down to prevent the ball from going into the end zone. Weird. It doesn't really matter at that point, right? Like, he's trying to block the ball from going into the end zone and reaches out. So he puts his body in between him and the ball and then reaches for it with his hands. But no, he misses. And by that time, the Browns Browns have, they've gotten there and they're stampeding and they've kind of kicked the ball away from it. Now, Roethlisberger never did fall down, but honestly, I believe it's because he thought James Conner had it. There was nobody else there when James Conner fell on it except for Roethlisberger, except he didn't fall on it. And I can't figure out why. Just jump, dive on the damn ball. And I think he just got too worried about the ball going into the end zone, but that's a better alternative than what happened in which you missed the ball altogether. He was trying to grab it with his hands instead of just falling on it with his body.
It was, like you said, one of those moments where even watching the replay, you already know what's going to happen. You think it's going to end differently than
yes.
It did.
Oh, every time I watch it, I think, what are you doing? The number one rule is cover up the ball. And instead, you fall behind the ball. Maybe he was running too fast. I don't know. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. But it's clear that Roethlisberger thought he was going to get it. And then by the time he didn't, it was a free-for-all. And was it Joseph that came in right and kind of kicked it away from them and fell on it in the end zone? Oh, my gosh. So some of these are moments that are cringeworthy, but definitely moments that I will remember. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Another one is the Malcolm Butler interception early in the game between Ravens and Titans, and it led to what was a field goal and a 10-0 lead for Tennessee initially. But, man, Butler just stepping right in front of a pass that was kind of off the mark from Lamar Jackson, but it instantly reminded me of the Super Bowl and him being on the goal line for the Patriots as a rookie against the Seahawks where for whatever reason Pete Carroll had decided to throw the ball instead of just handing it to Marshawn Lynch. We will never, ever, ever, ever be able to get over that decision as football fans. So what are a few moments that you will remember from this wild card weekend, or as I like to call it, supersized fries, please. Supersized wild card weekend. Also, you're not going to believe what happened to me on Monday morning on my way home from the show. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.